Now, Starbucks announced earlier this May that it will increase wages and training for non-unionized workers at corporate-owned locations. A growing number of Starbucks shops around the country are voting to unionize, including two spots in Wisconsin, Oak Creek and Plover, both of which officially voted last Friday. The union Starbucks Workers United said in April that any benefits that specifically exclude unionized employees would be illegal. The group has filed more than 80 claims against Starbucks to the National Labor Relations Board so far. Starbucks is just one company, but a big one, and there's a lot of attention on the drive to unionize the coffee shops and what it could all mean for the rest of the labor market. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever been involved in a union or an organizing effort, or as management negotiating with a union or a unionizing campaign? Are you part of this Starbucks story here in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Michael Childers is a professor in the Department of Labor Education at UW-Madison. Michael, welcome back to Central Time.
It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, starting on this specific bit of news, the Starbucks owner, Howard Schultz, saying, yeah, we're going to have a wage increase and special training, but only for the non-unionized shop. So what do you make of that?
Well, again, I'm not sure that he's exactly quoted correctly, and I'm not sure which piece. I know there was a piece back in the Wall Street Journal in April. That would clearly be a violation of the National Labor Relations Act, because the NLRA spells out pretty clearly that during the period where a union may be organizing, to either threaten employees with adverse consequences or to promise benefits if they reject a union is absolutely against the law.
Right. That's the New York Times reported that Starbucks was saying they would raise pay at corporate-owned spots. They would not apply to the recently unionized stores. But the company says, well, hold on, we can't unilaterally change conditions because they're unionized stores. Do they have? Would that be an argument they could make?
So I think we've got to get a little bit into the weeds, sure, before we can get back between the lines. But the bottom line is that's actually sort of similar to this claim that's being made by the hospital board in terms of why they say they can't quote unquote bargain with the nurses, right? There's nothing that prevents bosses and workers from meeting and conferring. And again, there's nothing statutorial that would prevent them from offering the same benefits to these corporate stores that they are to the corporate stores who have conducted these union votes or the ones who have filed for election. It would only be illegal if they did it explicitly to try and influence the actions of the workers, either trying to organize or prior to when the vote occurs. So no, there's nothing illegal. I mean, again, think back to even when COVID flared up and for example, many people in the supply chain, grocery workers, for example, got hazard pay or bonus pay or heroes pay, however you wanted to frame it. Those are raises that were given in areas where there's collective bargaining. And again, that's a mandatory item of bargaining, but it's usually the case that a union is not going to reject when their workers are being offered more wages.
Now, zooming out a little bit, Starbucks is a big, high-profile company. Their individual shops, though, are pretty small, and we have this one-store-at-a-time unionization effort. It's getting a lot of attention, I think, just because of the prominence of the company. How big a part of the story of labor today in the United States is an organizing effort like this one at Starbucks?
Oh, I think it definitely contributes to the zeitgeist. And I mean, don't forget, we actually had the Colectivo workers with their Colectivo Collective, which actually is credited with inspiring the workers at the Buffalo Starbucks, who kind of got the ball rolling nationally. And yes, I think it absolutely encourages workers from the perspective that they see that, wait, you know, we could actually form a union here and then get the opportunity to be confer with the boss as equals at the bargaining table around, you know, these mandatory items like conditions of work, hours and wages. I think, you know, the Gallup poll last year showed that union approval was at like near historic, like literally in decades has not been as high as it is right now. So, yeah, it's no question that I think these kind of cues have been rippling across the economy. And I mean, you know, not to mention the whole kind of labor shortage and the increased individual power that workers are able to exert in the marketplace right now.
Yeah, how much is that worker shortage, the labor shortage, tipping the balance in favor of somebody who wants their shop to be unionized?
You know, I think they're not necessarily related directly, but it just speaks to the idea that, you know, workers, I think, fundamentally or have, you know, in some ways people have reevaluated everything after COVID. And it's, what do you want from a job? What do you expect from work? You know, and again, I think, you know, consistently people kind of underestimate how bad their job is because of inertia. And it's when they finally start to say, you know, let me look at the opportunities that are out there. You've seen this sort of major, especially at the bottom half of the job market, this major sort of upheaval and sort of people trading up jobs.
I think when people think of the classic private industry union that might be a big factory, the auto plant, the meatpacking facility, whatever it might be, are we seeing a trend of more service sector unionization these days?
Well, I think there's no question. I mean, again, those are the jobs that are still here in our country, right? And they're the sectors of the economy that traditionally, going back to the, you know, 30s when the U.S. labor movement grew rapidly, were sectors that really weren't involved in that growth at that time. It was in what, you know, heavy manufacturing, et cetera. And yes, I think, you know, these kind of high tech jobs, we had, you know, the Raven organizing with the Activision quality assurance folks here in town. Obviously, we mentioned the nurses, both the Meritor nurses were in a tough bargain last year and ended up at a strike vote and very near the strike deadline before they reached a settlement. You have the nurses at UW-Madison trying to reform their union. So, I mean, I think that, you know, workers still want a voice at work, and regardless of the sector of the economy. And those, again, those are the jobs that are here. They're still here in the United States. So,
talking to Michael Childers, professor in the Department of Labor Education at UW-Madison, talking to us about unions these days. Starbucks unions getting a lot of attention now as more stores get unionized, and how we'll get into how unions might affect those who aren't involved in them. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you in a unionized workplace? Have you been in your life? What did you think about it? Do you want to be? Are you paying attention to these unionization drives, efforts at Amazon facilities getting attention? Starbucks, we've been talking about that. Colectivo, what our guest mentioned. Join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your experiences. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Michael Childers, professor in the Department of Labor Education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, looking at unions and workers' rights and the drive to unionize Starbucks stores, among others. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want your local coffee shop or other service establishment to be unionized? Do you think that is a good thing to see in your community? Have you been involved in a union, maybe even creating a union? Or if you're an employer, what do you think about efforts to unionize various workplaces? Call it at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your own experience at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Michael, an argument from unions over the years has been, you know, hey, if enough people are unionized, there's a spillover effect where wages go up to non-union employees in the same sector. Was that historically true? Is that something that still bears out?
It is something that still bears out. I mean, the difference in wages is, it depends on the specific sector, but around 10%. It's double digit increase. And it's not even just wages, it's the access to things like healthcare and especially some sort of a retirement plan. That's way higher representation for those benefits in workplaces where the workers have formed unions.
Let's talk about the playing field. There have been changes to labor negotiation rules over the years, some advances in favor of union efforts, some pushing back on that over the years at the state and federal level. What do you see as the key parts of that story right now?
Well, I guess, I mean, there hasn't been any major reform to labor law literally since the 1950s. There's been many attempts. There's been many politicians run on platforms saying that they're going to change this or that aspect. Even this most recent administration ran on the idea that they were going to implement this protecting the right to organize, or the PRO Act, and so far hasn't seen the light of day. You know, I think workers traditionally have always joined together when they feel like there's inequities. They, you know, they're looking for equity and voice in their workplace, you know, in balance for the, you know, demand for efficiency from their employers. And again, regardless of how the laws change or come and go, that's kind of the steady constant.
That's the laws, but how about enforcement via things like the National Labor Relations Board?
Oh, well, certainly. I mean, that's the 5-member panel appointed by the president. So clearly, the election matters from the respect that the president then has the ability, assuming that the Senate confirms their appointees, which could take us down a whole different rabbit hole. But yes, it's certainly the case that, especially over the last 3 administrations, we've seen both precedents get refined and then reversed and then re-reversed and then re-re-reversed in terms of, for example, the use of employers' email systems for union communications or for communicating with employees about the potential for joining a union. You know, under Obama, there was a decision where that was granted and said basically that's the equivalent of the water cooler of the 50s, right? And people de minimis used email for all sorts of purposes way beyond that of, you know, work. Then under the last administration, that got backed up and they said, well, no, we could try to, we can under certain circumstances, if it's consistent that you prohibit it for all, you know, other, you can't sell Girl Scout cookies, you can, you know, that kind of thing. And then now it's the, you know, the new board has reinterpreted, basically putting back into place that standard that was in place from back in the Obama administration. So that's just one example.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ron is with us in Black River Falls. Ron, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Real quick question for your guest. And if you've covered this already, I apologize. I was a late comer. I'm curious if you've seen any shift in unions in terms of what their goals are. You know, in the past, unions were really about job protection, and in an environment and economy with lots of jobs and not enough workers, I'm wondering if the goals of the unions themselves are different, say better or more organization towards earning better wages for workers, things like that, rather than just trying to protect jobs. I'll take my answer off the air.
Ron, thanks for the call. Michael?
That's a great question. And I mean, I think we all come to work for money. And of course, wages are always the number one item on any survey that's taken of workers, whether in a bargaining unit or not. I would say I want to unpack the question a little bit by just saying, you know, workers, you know, again, we all have our goals from the employment relationship in terms of, yeah, job security, reliable schedules. You know, we already talked about wages. We'll just stipulate that everybody wants more money. I guess I would say this. I mean, I think especially as you look at some of these organizing drives lately, workers want to make these jobs that you are, they're like family support, like a career, like the baristas, for example. You've heard the kind of this kind of, you know, the myth that, oh, well, that's, you know, these low wage jobs or starter jobs or for teenagers. And again, when you look at the data, people are in these jobs for the long term and generally have to work 2 or 3 of them to try to get by and make a living. And, you know, I just remember back from an interview with a Colectivo person that was part of their organizing. He said, we work here and we work here every day and we do a valuable service. And these are jobs that we would like to be able to stay in and also have a decent life. And I think from that respect, Ron's question is great because I really do feel like, again, kind of back to the conversation we were having about COVID and people rethinking what they want from the work relationship. I think these new unions are forming around the idea that, yeah, these jobs, you know, before it was get a job in manufacturing and those jobs are gone. It's, well, why can't these jobs be family supporting jobs?
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Michael Childers, professor in the Department of Labor Education at UW-Madison, looking at the cutting edge of unionization these days, a growing number of Starbucks shops, for example, unionizing. And Michael, one successful vote by organizing at an Amazon plant, which I think for some organizers has been kind of a holy grail. Others have fallen short, though. What are you watching for in this really huge employer that just got, in a lot of ways, got huger during the pandemic?
Yeah, there's no question. This is one that's going to be studied for quite some time. It's interesting from the perspective that this was a total grassroots effort that didn't really receive any support from any of the major established unions in the United States and Canada. We call them international unions, but they're unions that represent workers in both the U.S. and Canada. And they cracked the code by, in essence, doing what unions have always done successfully, which is build community from the bottom up and, you know, join together with a common goal of trying to improve their workplace and their working conditions. I mean, that, you know, COVID was kind of the genesis of all of that. It's clear that, you know, I guess I would say that they're at the end of the beginning. The thing that I'm watching for is, yes, they were very successful. Obviously, they succeeded where no one else has in terms of getting a majority of the workers to vote affirmatively that they wanted to form a union. Now their challenge is going to be getting Amazon, once all these challenges and the appeals are done, getting Amazon to the table and trying to bargain this first contract. Because in the United States, that's a daunting hurdle for any union, let alone an independent union.
We've seen over time, despite some of these successful unionizing efforts, a decline in the overall percentage of the workforce unionized in the United States. Right to work laws in many states, now including Wisconsin, and things like Act 10 for public employees in Wisconsin, make it harder maybe to get back into that. Do you see that trend, that decline in percent of the workforce unionized, ever going back up in the immediate or near-term future?
I would say, you know, consistently, most of the academics have stated that, you know, there's other models out there from other countries, whether we look at sector bargaining or a bargaining in a more broad base for the community. It's called bargaining for the common good. And you look at some of the unions that have been successful doing that. I'm thinking of the teachers back in 2019 when in West Virginia and many other states, you know, not to mention just down south of here in Chicago, the Chicago teachers had some pretty good success with community partnerships and trying to achieve both, you know, bargaining goals for them, but in general, goals that were trying to help their broader communities. As far as the actual union density numbers changing, time will tell. I mean, there's definitely been a surge in representative elections petitions filed with the NLRB. I mean, a lot of this driven, like you said, by the barista movement, but I think elsewhere as well. And yeah, again, it remains to be seen how successful or how sustainable this is in the longer term. But it's certainly the case that there's been a resurgence in interest, and especially in even the popular, like I said, kind of the zeitgeist now. It's almost like for the younger generation, you know, there's a curiosity that unions are cool now.
Michael, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. Take care.
That's Michael Childers, professor in the Department of Labor Education at UW-Madison, with us for a look at unions, Starbucks, and beyond.